Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. As I was preparing for tonight's show, I found the words of an old 60s song repeating in my head. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. Words that not only seem particularly apt in the face of the current glut of seemingly loveless headlines, but also provide a perfect introduction to tonight's conversation, which will be focusing on love, consciousness, and what's happening on the planet, and the opportunities that lie in front of us. My guest is Robert O. Williams, whose fascinating life journey spans being a musician on stage with the Beach Boys to having multiple near-death and out-of-body and spiritual awakening experiences, to becoming one of the world's foremost experts in subtle energy engineering technology, to lecturing and working with prominent scientists, to inventing and developing quantum code technology, authoring the book Love is the Power, and creating the Heart Plus app, whose purpose is to make the world a better place by moving humanity from fear to love. Robert O. Williams, welcome.
Sandy, thank you very much for having me on your show.
Wow, what a book, what a journey. I mean, it's just astonishing, and I have to say that I was riveted. It's probably one of the few books that I've looked at months ahead of an interview and jumped straight into it. I couldn't wait. So congratulations on that, Robert.
Thank you, Sandy. Thank you.
Now, you had a unique childhood filled with out-of-the-ordinary experiences. You had the ability to see auras and the capacity for clairvoyance. You had a great connection to nature and also to nature's spirits and a close spirit friend. Tell us a little bit in this first segment about your childhood and how that led up to the point where you invented your quantum code technology. And I know that's a lot to cover in a short time.
Well, first of all, yes, my childhood was unusual. Perhaps not as unusual as we think, though. I think most of us have clairvoyance, and I actually believe all of us have clairvoyance, or we can see other dimensions and other worlds when we are first born, before the you could say the disbelief overcomes our reality. So I think my own daughter was born clairvoyant as well, and I can see other children gazing around and looking at things that I can see still to this day that others can't see. But having said that, I absolutely felt alone because none of my friends reported such experiences, and my family certainly not. As you mentioned, there was one spiritual being, or a nature spirit you can call, that visited me regularly and taught me certain things about nature. We had a great backyard, and I was given free rein in that backyard. It was fenced in. So as far back as I can remember, I was there, and I would see these nature spirits, and I would see these spinning things, and I write about them in my book. But this one in particular was the only one that could actually communicate to me. And he would show me around the backyard at certain times of the day and certain seasons and point out things. One of my favorite stories is when it was right after a rain, and of course he got excited and showed me this beautiful rainbow, and we're all amazed whenever we see a rainbow because it's just so astonishing, and it just resonates something in something deep inside of us, I believe. But what was interesting is that, so he showed me the rainbow, and you know, we were both looking at it. Then a couple months later, I think, if not several weeks, it wasn't raining, but my mom had the sprinklers going out in the front yard, And he led me out there, and if you just stand just right, you could see the rainbow, even though it wasn't raining. It was just the sprinklers and the sunlight. And so he kept emphasizing that those seven colors of the rainbow, this is like an analogy for life. The seven colors are always there. They are always everywhere present. It just takes certain conditions to be able to see them. One is consciousness. You have to be awake and you have to be alive and have the five senses. And we have to have a certain relationship between light and the water and so forth, and these seven colors show up as the rainbow. We can do that right now if we had enough light and water and so forth. So like that, there are essences, there are essential, you could say, realities or things that are always here present, always as part of us, that only from time to time show up. It doesn't mean they show up for the first time when it only rains, for instance, but they're always there, and they begin to show up as we evolve, as we, you could say, pass certain milestones collectively. And so my childhood was really discovering how things that have been hidden are able to be perceived, experienced, and lived, even though they've always been there, but it's a function of consciousness. So that was kind of how I grew up.
That's how you grew up. And then, according to your book, with the onset of adolescence, a lot of this, these beings seem to disappear. You seem to lose your connection a bit, which resulted in a lot of anger and frustration and some really mysterious physical ailments. What do you think that was all about?
Yeah, the one being that I mentioned that showed me around and showed me the rainbows, he was the one that came and said that he was no longer allowed to continue to see me. I still was able to see the other beings and auras and so forth, but he was, you could say, my best friend. And he, in hindsight, I learned why. I had to go into life, and in incarnation has a certain requirement, and go through the stages of my own physicalness and the hormones and all those things that we all go through when we grow up. He had to allow that to happen on its own. So when he left, though, I felt very depressed, and as you say, I had some history of health problems, and they seemed to increase after he left. That's actually what drew me to music, because during my childhood, before this being left, and while I was mostly in nature in the backyard, there was a certain quality of my senses, you could say, there was a certain quality of reality that was a lightness, that was a freedom. It was kind of a freedom and kind of a joy that never seemed to end. And then after he left, that joy left as well. But I found it from time to time listening to music. And I think we can all relate to this, these moments where, for whatever reason, a song or even better at a live performance, we forget ourselves and we have that sense of freedom in that moment. And I experienced that not in live performances. I was too young for that, but listening to my parents' hi-fi and then playing my saxophone, there were times after I learned a certain amount of the scales and so forth that I would just start to play and I would feel the same kind of freedom. And that was then my escape, or at least my addition to all the other things I was experiencing as a little boy and as growing up into my teenage years. That was my place of joy and freedom that I went to over and over again.
Would you go so far as to say that playing the saxophone was a spiritual experience for you?
Definitely it was, yeah. And even just listening to music, absolutely.
Yeah. And you played it, I mean, you became obsessed with it, and you played it to the point where it was painful for you. I mean, why did you feel that you had to play it that much?
Well, the story behind that is when I was 7 years old, I had a bad bicycle accident, and I broke my jaw, and there was all kinds of injuries. Back in the 50s, you know, they didn't do too much. You heal up and you go on living, but it turned out that I had fractured my jaw, and it wasn't properly aligned when it was healing up, 7, 8, 9 years old, like that. And then later, while I'm playing my saxophone, my jaw began to go into spasm and hurt, or the jaw muscles, I should say. So that led to a very challenging time, because I, like you said, I had found that spiritual place, that effortless joy in music and playing my saxophone and playing. And now I'm in college, playing in different bands and groups, I was just consumed by the different ways that music was available to me. And then this pain kept increasing to the point where I woke up one morning and my jaw was locked shut, which was quite a terrifying experience. And just to make a long story short there, I went to doctors and dentists, and they said, well, gosh, your temporal mandibular joint, the TMJ, has been injured and it didn't grow back properly. And they said, well, that was the 7-year-old bicycle accident, and there was no way to fix it. And at this point now, I could barely stand to play my sax because it hurt so bad. And so they said, well, you know, this was the 70s. So they said, why don't you just play a different instrument? You know, this was my third year of college, and I had my whole life planned out as a musician, and I was going to get my teaching credential and go on the road with a band first. And, you know, this was my destiny. And now I couldn't play my saxophone. This made no sense. And I was very, very angry. I could say it was my second dark night, the second place that I remember questioning everything.
I'm going to hold you right there, Robert. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. My guest is former Beach Boys musician, educator, inventor of quantum code technology, and author of the book Love Is the Power, Robert O. Williams. Still to come, near-death experiences, out-of-body travels, sacred geometry, and uncovering the ultimate law. Stay tuned.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Robert O. Williams, I just want to continue with some of this fascinating backstory for a little bit longer. Let's pick up where we left off. It was just around about your college years that you discovered the Maharishi, Mahesh Yogi, and seeing his picture change the course of your life and prompted a decision to attend the Maharishi International University in Iowa. And you know, like all the best fictional stories, that's where destiny came into play, putting you in contact with the Beach Boys. Just tell us a little bit about that.
So I was at a place of complete confusion about the purpose of life when I was told I could no longer play my saxophone. And I was young, but I had I was very fascinated in my high school years with Eastern meditation, Eastern religions, and all religions. I was very fascinated with them all and looked for the common threads throughout them. But I wrote in my diary, which I still have, that after I was told I could no longer be a musician or play my saxophone, I wrote, I needed to find something that could never be taken away from me. And I felt that I needed now to find a guru, because I had read about gurus and understood that conventional philosophy of a guru was to reflect the highest potential in the devotee and allow that one to finally become one with the guru or become one with their highest potential. And that at that point, the guru is no longer needed and dissolves. But the time was early on in my life, and so I was not exactly sure what a guru meant and who or what he or she was until one night at Cal State Hayward, that's the college I was attending. Like you said, I got a parking ticket, and I had to go to the campus security office, campus police, to pay my fine. And something was it seemed to be vibrating on a picture frame, you know, the desks where people sit and they have pictures of their wives or children, and it's facing them, it's facing the chair where they sit. And so if you're on the other side of the desk, you can't really see what's in the picture frame. So I was like on that side of the desk, and the officer had left his desk to do get whatever the paperwork, and I just couldn't take my eye off the back of this picture frame. Finally, I didn't know whether it was polite to go around, and I still don't know if that's considered polite or rude, but I did it anyway. I walked around so I could see the picture, which was a photograph of Maharishi, and I'd seen him before, but it was also vibrating. Something was resonating with me, and I felt like that was the answer to my prayer, my search. I asked about him, and the campus officer said that, oh yes, this is the Maharishi. He teaches meditation. I've been meditating for 6 months, and my life is so much better, and I'm less stressed. And there's an intro lecture over at the Mickeljohn Hall at Cal State Hayward this Wednesday, and you should go and check it out. So I did, and I started meditation that Saturday. And so that actually, that quality that I talked about, Sandy, of my childhood, that freedom, that effortless joy, mm-hmm. that I first felt out in nature and then playing my music, when I first meditated, that very first meditation, there was that feeling again. There was that effortless joy, that unconditional love. And that was a turning point, and I was very, very interested in the whole philosophy and became an avid devotee. I didn't go all the way into Maharishi at the time, didn't really have devotees. He was a teacher. That's the word Maharishi, great teacher. So it wasn't the conventional guru thing, but I was very much into his teachings, and I went to MIU, as you mentioned, Maharishi International University, in the middle of Iowa. And it was, so I think you mentioned also that the Beach Boys had, around the same time, along with the Beatles, had all went to Rishikesh and learned not only meditation, but advanced techniques and how to teach meditation directly with Maharishi. And Michael Love of the Beach Boys was the most into it, you could say. And when they all came back, they had one more album to do on an existing record contract. And he wanted to get out of L.A., get into an environment, a higher vibrational environment, you know? Good vibrations, right? So he had the idea to build a studio or transform one of the buildings at campus, at the MIU campus in the middle of Fairfield, Iowa, into a studio to do a Beach Boy album. They did that. I was there attending. I had brought my saxophone. I could play for an hour or two without too much pain. So when they got to the point to add the horns to the songs they were recording, somebody told Mike Love that I was on campus, and why fly in musicians from L.A. all the expense when there's a student here on campus? But I had to audition. I had to play the parts. I had to, you know, pass the tests, and I did. And so next thing I know, I'm playing there on a Beach Boy album. And at the last recording session, I realized this was my once-in-a-lifetime, perhaps, opportunity. So I went up to Michael afterwards, and I said, you know what? I really can't afford to continue going to college here. This is my last semester. Can I just be a saxophone player for the Beach Boys? Can I tour with you? And he said, you know what? I think one of our saxophone players can't tour with us. So here I am within a couple months now, touring with the Beach Boys, playing Good Vibrations on stage in front of 10, 15, 20,000 people. So that started a whole another phase of my life.
You then lived on Mike Love's property along with a number of others and was working with him for a while. And that was when you really started becoming sick. And, I mean, you were confined to your bed for a long time.
Yeah. Like I said, I'd grown up, I had some kind of poison early on and other ailments. And I was born actually a blue baby, and my mother, bless her heart, they didn't know in the 50s. She was smoking and drinking and all those bad things, and they didn't know any better, and the diet was poor for all of us. So, yes, I'd grown up with all kinds of health problems, and now that I was, this was when I was 23, 24, I was with the Beach Boys, and yes, you're right, I lived on the Love Estate, Michael Love's property in Santa Barbara, and he started a production company, and I began working for the production company, but I also got more and more sick, more mysterious symptoms, and the doctors just didn't know what was going on. I couldn't digest anything. My liver first broke down, and my kidneys, and one thing after another, and they finally said, look, you're just getting worse and worse, and if you continue at this pace, you will be dead. We predict within 6 months, and we need to get you into the hospital right away. Now, this was one of those moments, Sandy, that I just knew that I couldn't do that, that there was some inner voice, some guidance that said, stay out of the hospital, stay out of the hospital. And I have nothing against hospitals. You know, they've saved my life in other times. But I decided not to go to the hospital and really just stay in that place of not knowing what was going to happen to me. And it's easier when you're younger. I didn't have a wife and a child, but I also didn't believe that death was permanent. I believed in the afterlife. I believed in other worlds, and I had had some experiences growing up of other worlds and other dimensions. And so, in a sense, I wasn't really that afraid of dying. I didn't like the suffering at all. I didn't like feeling so miserable, and I didn't like the feeling of not having a purpose. Like, again, I couldn't play my music, stopped touring with the Beach Boys. So that state lasted for several months, and I woke up one morning, and I was stumbling to get to the bathroom, and I either passed out or tripped and fell and hit my head. But the next thing, because I don't know really what occurred there, but my next memory was of being above my body, looking at my body, unconscious on the bathroom floor. And so the feeling was, oh, I've died. You know, this is it. And it wasn't a foreign environment. I felt that lightness again, that joy that I had grown up with, but also something more. And I kind of turned my attention, I suppose, and the next thing I experienced was absolute infinite light. I didn't have a conventional near-death experience where people see their relatives that have passed on in the tunnel and so forth, was just light. And then there was a little bit of me and the light, because there had to be some kind of separation from the light for me to even talk about it now, for me to even recognize that there is light in contrast to something else. And that was, I can only say, that was that freedom that I had experienced growing up and with music, but times a million. It was the essence of the heart of who we are that I had intuited, and complete unconditional love, and yet there was this sense of choice, and the choice was to go back into the light or to go back into my physical body, and I didn't want to go back to my physical body. The bliss was so comfortable and so, you could say the gravity to stay in that state of freedom was very, very strong. But the communication from somewhere was that I had a purpose to reincarnate or to go back to my physical body. At that point, Sandy, I actually then saw all these different dimensions as I began to precipitate back into my physical form. I saw very distinct dimensions, and the beings that were alive and living in that dimension, and the kinds of forms there were. And between each dimension, there was like a gap or where I went unconscious, similar to when you go to sleep, there's a gap, and then you'd have a dream maybe, and there's these gaps of nothingness. And I kept going closer and closer to my body, and I write all about that in my book, The Different Dimensions. And right before I got into my physical body, I remember that joyous, free state of love and with a reality that does not contain suffering, that does not contain cruelty, abuse, was the reality there. It was real. And then when I woke up in my body for about 5 minutes, there was no separation from that state of existence. So I remember breathing, my heart beating, my breath breathing, and it was also springtime in Santa Barbara, and I remember hearing the waves of the ocean. We lived by the ocean, and the birds singing and the sounds of nature. And there was this immediate understanding and impression that the earth was intended to be a paradise with all of us, that the blueprint, the potential of humanity and all life on this planet had the information, had the intelligence to be existing without cruelty, abuse, and suffering. And I lived that for about 4 or 5 minutes, and then it left, and then I felt my own pain, my own headache and stomach and all that stuff came back. But of course I was transformed. I cleaned up my mess and started to write everything that I had experienced down in my journals, which I still have these days, and I based some of the chapters of my book directly from reading those journals.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with educator, inventor, and former Beach Boys musician Robert O. Williams, whose book, The Power of Love, Moving Humanity from Fear to Love, and pioneering Heart Plus app invention and quantum code technology, are being hailed as vitally important for the future of humanity. We'll be back in a few moments.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Being
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Robert O. Williams, of course, we can only skim the surface of the incredible experiences and the understandings revealed in your book, The Power of Love. And that's probably just as well because, you know, I would like other people to read it. I enjoyed it so much. Let's move on to talk about some of the revelations about sacred geometry that you had when you were in those in-between places and how that led to quantum code technology.
Yeah, the dimension that was full of symbols and sacred geometries was very, very clear when I was coming back into my body. And I learned to take journeys back into that dimension, that reality, symbols are symbols, right? It's like a symbol of a musical note. If you're in the right state of consciousness, or you have knowledge of music, the symbol becomes the sound. And these symbols that I saw are like that. So in the proper relationship to the symbols, to these sacred geometries, states of consciousness become full of aliveness. And the symbols then become only the doorways to activation of certain states of consciousness, if that makes any sense. So I wrote all these symbols down, and I visited these domains many times between 1979, when I had my first NDE, and then through 1985. Turns out that this idea of evolution, that there are certain phases that anything physical or anything manifest goes through, it's obvious. The seed goes through the phase of seedness to the sprout, to the stem, to the leaves, to the blossoming flower. We see these cycles happening in all things. Some cycles take millions of years, you know, a rock or whatever, and our whole solar system. Other cycles are trillionths of a second. But everything has a cycle in this manifest existence. And what governs one state to another has to do with these, what I call the laws of nature, or the laws, the information fields that have the prepositioned blueprints. So it's not a random thing when the rose seed opens up and then grows its pathway to the rose bush, the rose flower. These are information fields that the carbon molecules and the other structures on the molecular level of that rose plant follow. They follow these information fields. Now, humanity is governed by the same laws. The destiny, or you could say the next highest state of evolution for humanity itself, has a variety of information fields. So I talked about that state where there was a reality of humans and all life on Earth living with their differences, their individual unique forms, but without suffering, without cruelty and abuse. And we know that that's a state of consciousness. That's something that I know that you and your viewers and your listeners, there are things that we just simply can't do, no matter how much money we're paid, bad things. I won't even mention them. We know that we cannot do them. We're not in that state of consciousness. And yet they're happening on this planet still. There are people that are doing horrible, horrible things as we speak. Now, that is not the... It's a certain phase, and we can talk philosophically how that happened and so forth. But what is so inspiring to me and encouraging is that those blueprints for a higher state of functioning society, a higher state of humanity, those blueprints are now more alive, more, they're vibrating stronger. They are more active than ever before, than ever before. And that's what motivated me to write the book, because that higher gauge symmetry is a scientific term. That higher state of consciousness is a function of our own participation with life. And that, unlike the rosebush or the caterpillar to the butterfly and all these other examples, human beings have a very unique gift, and that is we can participate with our own consciousness. We can participate with our own lives. We can participate with our own thoughts, with our breath even. And as we are given that opportunity of our own co-creative potential, we can either resonate more and more with the blueprints of higher love, higher consciousness, harmony and creativity, or if we want, and it's going to be more and more difficult, we can resonate with those things that are not life-supporting or those things that contract us and are full of fear and full of separateness in a damaging sense. So we can intuit, you know, why do we all have hope? Why that hope is built on something that is real. The hope that we have for a better world, a better humanity, a better life, is based on that reality that I spoke about. It's not something that is a hope that's in vain or a futile attempt. This is built in. The question is, how long will it take us to get enough of the higher vibratory resonating community to stabilize, and what do we have to pass through to get there? But on the other side of this, we see symptoms of pre-existing, you could say, paradigms that were based on fear, that were based on separateness, starting to, you could say, at least wobble, if not completely start to fail. Not, I think your listeners know enough about the what's going on the planet that a law of nature is that in any kind of phase transition from one state of order to another, to a higher state of order, it is preceded by chaos. It is preceded by disorder. That's what has to happen for that existing boundary to break and the new boundary to be created. We see that in the plants. We see it in the caterpillar to the butterfly. We see it in our own bodies. When our cells want to rejuvenate and become a new cell, it goes through a death process. It goes through a chaotic, disordered state. So in mass, we are experiencing that, right? We're looking at a lot of fear. We're looking at the symptoms of separateness, the symptoms of the structure of fear beginning to wobble. And what we don't see too much of, with the exception of your show and others, thank goodness, is the love that is beginning to show up in places that it very seldom showed up before. And the unconditional love. We're talking about people who don't even know other people, helping without expecting anything in return. That is the symptom of the higher vibration. That is the call for us all. And hopefully we won't have to go through too many more tragedies, but the fact that those tragedies have activated and brought us to a state of loving each other in certain conditions and certain situations. And for some of us, it's all the time. We wake up, and we wake up in that love, in that state of consciousness that is not afraid of the other. It doesn't mean that we're not protecting our children. It doesn't mean that we let badness happen. But it means that we're living life based on the state of consciousness of love. And that's what I call the love is the power, because that state of consciousness, if we get enough, we only need a small percentage of the population. If we get enough of those hearts that are resonating, that have blossomed into that reality, then it will affect the majority. This is not a psychological phenomenon. This is not something that we have to learn or earn. It's not something we have to earn. This is a phase that is inevitable that we're going into. And what we want is to speak about this and be alert for these signs of unconditional love and keep our attention on those places that are loving and present, so that those vibrations then become more and more strong and it will have a global effect even more than they already have right now.
And that is something that for many people is becoming increasingly harder, you know, to attain and maintain in the face of all of the distraction that's going on. But you invented the Heart Plus app, which is designed to reduce that stress, and in fact has been measured at reducing stress by more than 30%, and to open the heart chakra. And that is part of your mission to move humanity from fear to love. How does it actually work?
So the symbols that I saw and then discovered in all the indigenous religions, in the art and in the scriptures, those symbols are they're mandalas. They're circular geometric forms that have to do with the human condition without suffering. So it's like the rose, the flower, the geometries and the blueprint for the rose flower that has been latent because of this different previous phases of the seed and the sprout and the leaves and stems and so forth become active. So the symbols and these the Heart Plus app contain those information fields or those frequencies, or we call them codes. They're vibratory, very discrete and specific vibratory frequencies, ways that energy moves, and they've been there latent since the beginning of time, and they become more active the more loving we are, or the more, and let me just say that, okay, the Heart Plus app enhances the environment of the heart, enhances the environment of unconditional love in its various forms. So unconditional love has a role in all phases of our lives. So there's 108 of these sacred geometries, these sacred frequencies, and that's what we were able to get actually to download on an app for your cell phone. And I should really talk about Dr. William Tiller at this point. William Tiller was
Robert, I'm going to have to hold you there.
Of this app.
We'll come back to Bill Tiller after the break. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with musician, educator, inventor of quantum code technology, and one of the world's foremost experts in subtle energy, engineering and technology, Robert O. Williams. We'll be back with more after this break.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Spiritual, metaphysical, green living, psychic, alternative healing, life coaching. Do any of these or similar terms apply to your business or cause? If so, you are in a niche market with a very specific audience. Conscious Gate PR is the world's leading conscious public relations agency. With a global reach of over 4 million and growing, we offer comprehensive media campaigns to our targeted market. Learn more at ConsciousGatesPR.com. Conscious marketing for conscious minds.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living. A chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Robert O. Williams, just before the break, you were telling us about Bill Tiller's involvement in your Heart Plus app.
His story is so fascinating. He was the chairman of the Department of Materials Sciences at Stanford University, very high position, very conventional. He taught crystallography. He taught the conventional way that the Earth creates crystals. He knew all the math. He has three textbooks that are still available at Stanford University. During his journey into learning the technical aspects and the scientific knowledge of crystals, he started to have these, you could say, downloads or these strong intuitions that there was something special about the crystalline structure. So the short story is crystals transduce higher dimensional energy. They transduce what Bill calls subtle energy. And so we worked with crystals. We worked with how to broadcast these sacred geometries, these mandalas of higher consciousness. And we were able to broadcast them at first over in local environments, then over the radio waves, and then different kinds of higher frequency waves. These are all life-supporting frequencies. There's nothing harmful about them. And then we discovered a way to, for those out there that know the difference between analog and digital, we were able to find a way to jump from analog to digital and then broadcast these very same frequencies to the digital domain, which led to the ability to have a URL broadcasting these innate frequencies of life and frequencies of the heart through a URL that you can go to and download on your cell phone called the Heart Plus app. And we wanted everybody to have this app. It's only $2, I think, for a one-time fee. You get them all the time. So that means every time you turn on your cell phone, those subtle frequencies, and if those, if you want to know more about how that works, you can go to his website or our website. But those subtle frequencies now that are carried on the waves that are already carried on the signals that are already coming out of your cell phones that we talk and play music on and all those other things that are carried on our cell phone waves. We have those frequencies of love. And you're right, there was a two-year study done by another professor, Beverly Rubik, double-blind controlled study showing that people who use the real app connected to our URL, to our field generators, compared to just a placebo or just one that wasn't connected, the ones that were connected, their heart rate variability increased by 30%, which means their stress went down by 30%. A very, very significant finding, which published in a medical journal and had passed the peer review. So it's real science. The reason that it helps the heart is because this is our next. This is what's fascinating is that it helps our physical hearts, the way our heart beats, and copes with stress, along with our spiritual hearts. Our hearts that know that love is powerful, and know that that love and light can overcome the darkness in these times of tragedy and suffering. So it's something that I hope everybody gets. It's also a time of reminding each other that that love is there, and when we are confronted with the pain and the suffering, we don't have to go anywhere. We just identify what we are feeling in that moment, and we allow that. Now, that's love. We unconditionally allow that emotion, that feeling, that thought, that condition, and that is what can transform the very thing that is causing us pain. We don't have an agenda for the transformation. It's just being in resonance with unconditional love. That's how my own life was saved, and how I began to heal up on my own way back at 79 and onward. And I've seen it in thousands of people at this point, where this acceptance, this love that we're talking about, paradoxically has power. Even though it's not directed to do something, it is just the state. It is just the way a mother holds her newborn child to her heart, without thinking, "What am I going to get out of this deal? What am I going to get from this?" It is real love. It's part of our very existence, and it's now time for that part to become more and more available to us at first, and more powerful to solve the problems that have been created in these lower states of consciousness. Because along with higher vibrational love and the acceptance of our own dilemmas comes solutions to the problems, because all that it takes is just to raise consciousness, raise the tides, and all the boats begin to raise. So how are we going to fix the pollution, all these things? The solutions are there. Yeah. They're in nature. We will begin to tap into those. Many of them already are. We begin to have insights and epiphanies in the middle of the nights. And that's how we can create a better planet, starting with ourselves, with that love.
I've come across a lot of new technology in recent years. I'm very familiar with bioresonance equipment and technology, and have worked closely with some people who have been working with children. Particularly children who are struggling at school, you know, kids on the spectrum, kids with ADHD, kids who, you know, do not appear to fit the norm. And I do know that what actually happens there is that that technology reduces stress. And I was told by a good friend of mine who uses that technology, is that when they reduce the stress around a child or that individual is freer to be more of who they really are, which of course is love. We are love. And to actually come across something like your app that costs $2, you know, compared to thousands of dollars for some of this equipment, or, you know, hundreds of dollars for being run on these programs, is quite phenomenal. And it makes it really accessible to all of us. You know, we're going to be out of time soon, Robert. There's so much more I'd love to talk to you about. But there was one thing in your book, there were many things in your book that touched me deeply, but one passage that I highlighted because it really speaks to what we're all experiencing now. And I'd just like to read that, you know, before we close, and have you comment, you know, have your last comments to be on this. Because I think it's so important. You wrote that all forms of physicality respond to all that is changing from moment to moment. The sun, the moon, the stars, the weather, and the fluctuating magnetic fields all affect our physical reality. Some changes occur in billionths of a second, while others occur once every multi-billion years. Over the last 100 years, the collective intuitions of humans have aligned more than ever before. We've all been intuiting radical change. We've been sensing the season upon us. It's inevitable, in other words, and how things will look on the other side of this transformation is not inevitable. In fact, we've been obliged to participate both individually and, more importantly, together in the transformation itself. I'm not going to read any more of that because we don't have enough time, but what you're saying there is that we all need to get with the program and collectively raise our frequency, our vibration, you know, to that level of higher, you know, that state of love where we become free of stress and we can be productive in changing things. Would you like to add to that before we close?
Thank you for reading that passage. And it is the time. We are all in this together. And it's people like yourself, Sandy, with your show and your listeners. This is power. This is good power. This is power to change for the good. Just this show, knowing each other, are existing. We are resonating with this message intuitively and in other ways. So I want to end by acknowledging this collective phenomenon, every one of your listeners, with gratitude, because we are making a difference. And to enjoy the little steps, to celebrate these little bits of achievement, will help. To dance and sing in celebration and to know each other and talk to each other, keep our attentions on that which we know is that higher consciousness as much as we can. And so that's how I'd like to end, with gratitude. Thank you so much, Sandy.
Beautiful way to end the show. Robert O. Williams, thank you so much. For more information about Robert O. Williams' book, Love is the Power, Moving Humanity from Fear to Love, Quantum Code Technology, the Heart Plus app, Heal the World Project, and the H2 Optimizer, visit 108.net and loveisthepower.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for joining me today, and I hope you'll join me again at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.